Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Yeah, welcome back. Whatever. That's what I feel like. That's what I feel like right now. Just sip my coffee. Whatever. Whatever, Lord. Whatever you want to do with this show, with this country. Now you can bring it back up. Now it sounds a little soft in my ears. Where do we start? Hey, everybody. How you doing? I am so happy that I'm saved and that God rules the universe with his feet up, because we are not doing a very good job of running much of anything these days, especially here in America, but around the world. So I've got a lot I want to get into here, and I'm just barely hanging on. We've been doing this kind of... We've seen a trend here lately. Welcome back to the Steve Noble Show. TheSteveNobleShow.com, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us there. You can join us right here in the studio via live video, because that's where we live these days. Welcome to the digital age, which is just increasing the rapidity at which this nation and the world is just going into the toilet. But live on Facebook Live, so you can go to the Steve Noble Show page there. Or are we live on YouTube? So we're like live on YouTube. We have the Steve Noble. Did you hear my name enough today? The Steve Noble show page on YouTube. So we're live there. If you're off of Facebook, you're like, I dumped Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg straight from HE double hockey sticks. Okay, fine. Then, you know, go to YouTube. So you can check it out that way. All right. So very snarky on Fridays, because when you do what I do by the end of the week, when you've immersed yourself in all of this garbage, a lot, plus a husband, father, teaching four classes of homeschool, high schoolers, civics and ethics, constitution stuff, and all the other things going on. And then you just kind of get worn out. And I'm so glad that there's more to life than just politics and what's going on in the news, even though these things are crazy. So let me read you a story. Okay, we're gonna start with story time today here on the Steve Noble Show. And this is from something that came out yesterday. So you just got to check this out, right? It's story time. A weird thing happened right after the November 3rd election. Nothing. The nation was braced for chaos. Liberal groups had vowed to take to the streets, planning hundreds of protests across the country. Right-wing militias were girding for battle. In a poll before Election Day, 70% of Americans voiced concern about violence. Instead, an eerie quiet descended. As President Trump refused to concede, the response was not mass action, but crickets. When media organizations called the race for Joe Biden on November 7th, jubilation broke out instead. Really? I didn't notice that. As people thronged cities across the U.S. to celebrate the democratic process that resulted in Trump's ouster. Woohoo! A second odd thing happened amid Trump's attempts to reverse the result. Corporate America turned on him. Hundreds of major business leaders, many of whom had backed Trump's candidacy and supported his policies, called on him to concede. To the president, something felt amiss. Quote, it was all very, very strange, unquote, Trump said on December 2nd. Within days after the election, he said, we witnessed an orchestrated effort to anoint the winner even while many key states were still being counted. In a way, Trump was right. There was a conspiracy unfolding behind the scenes, one that both curtailed the protests and coordinated the resistance from CEOs. Both surprises were the result of an informal alliance between left-wing activists and business titans. The pact was formalized in a terse little notice joint statement of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and AFL-CIO published on Election Day. Both sides would come to see it as a sort of implicit bargain, inspired by the summer's massive, sometimes destructive racial justice protests, in which the forces of labor came together with the forces of capital. Insert right there. Insert the Great Reset. Okay, good little teaser there. To keep the peace and oppose Trump's assault on democracy. The handshake between business and labor was just one component of a vast cross-partisan campaign to protect the election. an extraordinary shadow effort dedicated not to winning the vote, but to ensuring it would be free and fair, credible and uncorrupted. For more than a year, a loosely organized coalition of operatives scrambled to shore up America's institutions as they came under simultaneous attack from a remorseless pandemic and an autocratically inclined president. Though much of this activity took place on the left, it was separate from the Biden campaign and crossed ideological lines with crucial contributions by nonpartisan and conservative actors. The scenario the shadow campaigners were desperate to stop was not a Trump victory. It was an election so calamitous that no result could be discerned at all, a failure of the central act of democratic self-governance that has been a hallmark of America since its founding. Their work touched every aspect of the election. They got states to change voting systems and laws and help secure hundreds of millions in public and private funding. They fended off voter suppression lawsuits, recruited armies of poll workers, and got millions of people to vote by mail for the first time. They successfully pressured social media companies to take a harder line against disinformation and user data-driven strategies to fight viral smears. They executed national public awareness campaigns that helped Americans understand how the vote count would unfold over days or weeks, preventing Trump's conspiracy theories and false claims of victory from getting more traction. After Election Day, they monitored every pressure point to ensure that Trump could not overturn the result. Quote, the untold story of the election is the thousands of people of both parties who accomplished the triumph of American democracy at its very foundation, unquote, says Norman Eisen, a prominent lawyer and former Obama administration official who recruited Republicans and Democrats to the board of the Voter Protection Program. This is a really long article. I'm only reading you the first part, then we'll talk about it when we come back from the break. This is the inside story of the conspiracy to save the 2020 election. Based on access to the group's inner workings, never before seen documents and interviews with dozens of those involved from across the political spectrum. It's the story of an unprecedented, creative, and determined campaign whose success also reveals how close the nation came to disaster. Quote, every attempt to interfere with the proper outcome of the election was defeated, says Ian Bassin, the co-founder of Protect Democracy, a quote-unquote nonpartisan rule of law advocacy group. Quote, but it's massively important for the country to understand that it didn't happen accidentally. The system didn't work magically. Democracy is not self-executing, unquote. That's why the participants want the secret history of the 2020 election told. Even though it sounds like a paranoid fever dream, a well-funded cabal of powerful people ranging across industries and ideologies, working together behind the scenes to influence perceptions, change rules and laws, steer media coverage, and control the flow of information. And they believe the public needs to understand the system's fragility in order to ensure that democracy in America endures. Aha! Finally, the cabal, the conspiracy uncovered. Or is it? Now you can bring back up a little bit. Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. For all of you non-radicals out there, this form of music that you hear, that's called ska. S-K-A, ska. That's like kind of a cross between some grunge rock, punk rock, and reggae. Ska, that's what that's called, in case you like it. I know the odds are good that you won't. Anyway, here's what I was reading to you from. This was a Time magazine article, huge, 14 pages printed out. I read the whole thing, 6,700 words on time.com is their website. I'm going to put the link up for you. And rather ominous, and then it's just a feeding frenzy. As everything is right now. Okay, so I'm going to put this up on the Facebook Live feed so you can see that if you go to the Steve Noble Show Facebook page and you'll see it. So here's the title of it, The Secret History of the Shadow Campaign That Saved the 2020 Election. So you know the article's author, Molly Ball, B-A-L-L, Time Magazine, so you know it's slanted from the left. I don't know anything about Molly Ball, but I think if I spent 5 minutes or 10 minutes looking into her activity, she's probably very left-leaning as well. And so now you get the other narrative here, which I think they've been wanting to tell for a while. And one of the things that you learn when you read through this article, assuming you believe it, is that there was a massive effort starting early last year into the summer led by a guy named Mike Podozer. P-O-D-H-O-R-Z-E-R. I don't know how. Mike Podozer. Sometime in the fall of 2019, Mike Podozer became convinced the election was headed for disaster and determined to protect it. What would that disaster be? A Trump gets reelected. And then he pulls off something that even if everybody wants to throw him out of office, he still stays, you know, because he's an autocrat and he wasn't going to leave. Yada, yada. This was not his usual purview. For nearly a quarter of a century, Podorzer, senior advisor to the president of the AFL-CIO, I should tell you something, the nation's largest union federation, has marshaled the latest tactics and data, yada, yada, yada. So then they just, because I think they were dying to expose themselves on all this stuff, just wanted all us idiots and everybody else, everybody on the right, everybody on the left, to know just how smart they are. And when I read this thing, here's what happens. Okay, now this is my, I feel like this is what the Lord has called me to do. My job is to kind of wreck everybody. My job is to question everything and seek discernment and not allow myself to be completely overridden by my political leanings. And that's called a confirmation bias. Here's how this works. You share the stories, you retweet stuff, you repost stuff that you like and that you agree with, and that backs up your positions, right? Your opinions. And then you ignore, delete, attack things that don't. So we all live in an echo chamber on the left, on the right, inside the church, outside the church. Everybody chooses to live in an echo chamber in the digital world we're in. And so we're losing the battle of discernment, and we're all a bunch of idolaters. Okay, all that stuff's coming off. You know, no pretense here today. I'm just giving you exactly what I think. And you go back to the book of Genesis, and Moses is up on Mount Sinai. He's getting the law from the Lord. He comes back down, and what does he run into? A drunken orgy, which would make January 6th at the Capitol look like a romper room. Okay, a drunken, crazy orgy. They melted down a bunch of the stuff that the Egyptians had given them when they left town, and turned it into a big golden calf because, gosh, Moses has been gone a while, and we just got to worship. And so how convenient, in their flesh, they make a golden calf, which is hearkening back to their days in Egypt. And then, hey, let's all get it on and have a big, crazy, drunken orgy and just human depravity all over the place. So Moses comes down, and God's like, okay, we'll deal with this. And so here's what I want you to do. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. Go read it yourself. Melt down their golden calf, their idolatrous golden calf. Melt it down, then pound it into ash, and then mix it with water, kind of like Kool-Aid, and then make them all drink it. If you guys, I lead you out of captivity. I'm giving you my word. I'm giving you the truth. I'm giving you guidelines here. I've selected you. I've chosen you. Out of all the people on the earth, I've chosen you. I'm rescuing you out of 400 years of slavery. I'm bringing you out here. I saved you. I'm going to give you this land of flowing with milk and honey. But I got to deal with Moses first. Don't come up here. I got to deal with Moses. Don't you touch the mountain. You're going to die. We'll see in a little bit. No. So melt it down, pound it into ash, mix it with water, and make him drink it. So here in America, this is what I think. Okay. Here in America, we are political idolaters. Most of us certainly on the left, and a lot of us on the right. And then while I appreciated Donald Trump and his administration and prayed for him and hoped the best for him, still do, I think that we turned him into an idol. Now we get another golden calf. Politics is the golden calf. Washington, D.C. is the golden calf. Political power is the golden calf. And I'm not saying that politics doesn't matter. If you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you already know how I deal with this, right? It does matter. But the gospel's preeminent. Politics is important because it affects people. People made in the image of God, yada, yada. I'm going to keep repeating myself. So God's like, okay, so you turn the government into governmental control. You turn, because you want a Saul, because I'm not good enough for you. So you want a Saul. And then, of course, a prophet told everybody, here's what you're going to get, by the way. If you want a king, God will give you a king, but here's what you're going to get. He's going to start taking all your stuff and all the best of your guys and all this stuff, okay? And then we turn it into an idol. We look to government and control of the White House as opposed to relying on God. We're not praying for those in authority over us. We certainly really don't have a really big interest in quiet and peaceable lives. We want control so that we can do good things and please the Lord, right? But we want control. And we get our guy in the White House and woo, this is awesome. I love it. I got a Batman up there, which means I don't have to police the streets. I don't pretty much have to do anything. We got a bully guy up there. Great guy, speaks his mind, blah, 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 does stuff for the life issue, religious freedom, all these things. Move the, in Israel, move the embassy into Jerusalem. This is great. He's taking care of all of it for us. So we can just go back and take care of ourselves, right? So now you get this, and is Donald Trump guilty of it as well? Probably. Prideful, idolatrous of himself, of the position. And God says, okay, fine. You guys, here you go with your golden calf again. So your boy's going to lose. And I'm going to elevate a guy into the office that you can't stand, who can't really campaign. He's like a third not there. And he's going to run a non-campaign. And your guy's going to lose. Now, you can talk about and argue over how he lost. But he lost. And God lifts up and he puts down. Joe Biden's in that building right now because God said it's going to happen. Either God makes it happen or he allows it to happen. Okay? He intermingles perfectly with human free will and our depravity. Okay? So then we just, as your golden calf goes down, you lose it. QAnon, right? It was going to be what? What are the dates, all my Q friends out there? What are the dates that we've gone through? November 7th, November 10th, then it was going to be November 22nd, then it was December 4th. Oh, wait till December 14th. Oh, wait till December 20th. Oh, wait till January 3rd. Wait till January 6th. That's when it's really going to happen. And now it's January 20th, and then January 20th doesn't matter to God. God doesn't care about the U.S. Constitution and then January 20th. Now, get this. It's March 4th through 6th. Something's going to happen in Washington, D.C. So I engaged a couple guys on Facebook, and they were like, oh, yeah, look what's happening. All the hotel prices that weekend in Washington, D.C. are like $1,500 a night. They're trying to keep us from going because Donald Trump's running the government from Mar-a-Lago with the military. And so they're pricing the rooms astronomically. So in literally 60 seconds, I went to my Marriott app. I pulled up 19 hotels in Washington, D.C. that weekend, and the price was between $98 and $350. Welcome back to Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Wow, a little unglued today, and just struggling with this stuff. And I'm glad it's the weekend, and I get to leave the studio here soon, and I'm going to divest myself and push away from the table and not be a glutton when it comes to the news of the day. So I was telling you, of course, you know, we have all the thing. My Pillow's out there now. Yeah, Mike Lindell, God bless him. Absolute proof. Please share with everyone you know to save our country. And then he makes his case on and on and on and on and on. Same basic stuff we've been hearing for a couple of months about how the election was stolen in foreign countries and all this kind of stuff. And then today or yesterday, you've got the Time Magazine article that's a lot of people on the right, a lot of conservatives, plenty of QAnon people are like, yeah, see, look, there it is. And now they're rubbing it in our face. The secret history of the shadow campaign that saved the 2020 election. So both sides claiming, the left claiming in this article, super long, 6,700 words, the secret history of the shadow campaign that saved the 2020 election, basically saying we knew Donald Trump was going to try to steal the election. He would do anything to do it. He's going to marshal the troops. He's going to stay in office. He's going to refuse to leave. And we have to defend the constitution. They didn't say constitution. We have to defend the democracy. We got to defend it. So this is their explanation of what they did, patting themselves on the back, and we saved the country from a second term from this whack job. Okay? Basically, the taller, oranger version of the little rocket man from North Korea. So now this is their version, and everybody on the right goes, see, there it is. Now they're just rubbing in our nose. There it is, a vast conspiracy on the left, including big tech and big corporations, to steal the election. Although they don't talk in here, of course, about how they might have done that, if that's what they did. But what they're saying is, no, we took defensive measures to make sure with the COVID pandemic and everything Trump's going to do, because he's not going to leave office, that we're going to protect the country and ensure that this dictator doesn't get back in by stealing the election. No, he stole it. No, they stole it. No, he stole it. No, they stole it. That's called chaos and distraction while people are dying and going to hell. So we're all focused on Washington, D.C. and Biden and Trump and QAnon and Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, and this, that, and the other thing. And what about the gospel? Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll get back to that. What about discipleship? Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, yeah, we'll do that. When? Well, you know, when our churches reopen. You know, Satan just loves it. You know, he's just loving it. And so that's what I do. I look at both sides and I realize we're all in the flesh. I've got plenty of sin of my own. And somebody told me years ago, hey, Steve, always be suspicious of yourself. Oh, that's pretty good advice. And I'm going to be suspicious of everybody else at the same time, because the one thing we all have in common, you, me, the Pope, your pastor, Biden, Trump, Pelosi, Ted Cruz, far right, far left, Antifa, Mother Teresa. You want to know what we all have in common? Flesh. Human flesh and depravity. So I don't trust anybody more than I can throw them. Myself included. Okay? So maybe God's just melting down this big cow we've made and making us drink it. And here's some examples of what that looks like. And so, if you want to continue to worship at that altar, go ahead. I'm not your judge. Here's where the Senate Republicans, Democrats stood on controversial issues. So this happened overnight last night, right? 15 hours from Thursday into Friday. It's called Votorama. It's not a Boy Scout thing. Votorama. So here's what they do when the Democrats use this. Reconciliation is a way to get around the filibuster, which is just a way to get around having to have 60 votes in the Senate to get something passed. But it opens up the door to something called Votorama, and they can do like all these different amendments. So the Republicans, and this was smart, say, okay, we're going to put all these amendments in here, all these individual issues that are basically are going to turn into campaign commercials over the next 24 months, and where everybody's going to have to vote on it. So here's some examples. And this will just show you how wrecked it is and how bad the golden calf is and why it tastes so bad as we eat it. Go look that up in Genesis. We're going to put senators on the record, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, meanwhile, hit Republicans for pushing messaging amendments to score political points. Exactly. So here's some things that happened. With the Senate split evenly, 16 of the votes were 50-50 along party lines. Those that passed received tie-breaking votes from Kamala Harris. Those that failed did not. So I'm just going to take you through some examples here. And you can see what's happening in Washington, D.C., which will show you, I think, at this point, the folly of worshiping that altar, which, again, I believe God has melted down with this election and everything else and all the chaos and all the division, even in the church. And now we're eating it. Senator Roy Blunt, Republican from Missouri, introduced an amendment opposing coronavirus relief funding for schools that don't reopen after teachers had a chance to get the coronavirus vaccine. It didn't pass. Senator Pat Toomey, a Republican from Pennsylvania, introduced an amendment opposing sanctuary cities. That didn't pass. These are great campaign ads in the next 2 years. Senator Ron Johnson, Republican from Wisconsin, introduced an amendment supporting the continued construction of the border. While that didn't pass, Mike Lee, Republican from Utah, introduced an amendment opposing the violation of free speech of religion. How do you think that did? Correct. That didn't pass. Tom Cotton from Arkansas introduced an amendment opposing court packing. It didn't pass. Senator Rick Scott from Florida introduced an amendment supporting border security and immigration enforcement. Of course, that didn't pass. Senator Chuck Schumer, however, watch this. This political end around is hilarious and fascinating and amusing. Senator Chuck Schumer introduced an amendment to strip away three GOP-sponsored amendments that had passed earlier in the night with bipartisan majorities, meaning he had some Democrats that voted with the Republicans. Okay, yeah, we're not going to let that fly. Those amendments opposed stimulus checks for illegal aliens, opposed Biden's decision to cancel the Keystone Pipeline, and supported fracking. Harris cast a tie-breaking vote in support of Schumer's amendment, and it passed, which means Schumer then came back around, strong-armed his people, who voted with the Republicans on common-sense legislation amendments, and forced them to vote, then reverse themselves a few hours later with his own amendment. This is the folly and the chaos and the brokenness of the Senate. McConnell introduced an amendment to undo Schumer's amendment. This is like a bunch of kids in a playground. It didn't pass, of course. But there were some GOP wins. Check these out. Senator Roger Wicker from Mississippi introduced an amendment supporting funding for restaurants and bars hurt by the pandemic. Because now that Biden's the president, you got to change your direction there. It passed 90-10. Wow. Rubio introduced an amendment opposing tax increases on small businesses during a pandemic. That passed 100-0. Wonder what would have happened if Trump were still in office. I just have to laugh because it's so disgusting. Senator Todd Young from Indiana introduced an amendment opposing stimulus checks for illegal immigrants. That passed 58-42. Democrat Senators Hassan Hickenlooper, Kelly, Manchin, Peters, and Sinema, Stabenow, and Tester all voted for it. But they had to reverse their positions later when Schumer came back around with his own amendment, right? So they wimped out. Senator Ben Sasse introduced an amendment supporting proper care for babies who survive abortions. Check this out. It passed 52-48. All Democrats but Senator Casey and Manchin opposed it. 48 Democrats said, did you just say you want to help babies that survived an abortion? You can't sign on to that. And what do you expect God to do with a country like this? Bless it? Ernst introduced an amendment supporting the imprisonment of illegal immigrants charged with violent crimes. All Democrats but Manchin and Independent Senator Angus King of Maine, who caucuses with the Democrats, opposed it. Oh, Lord help us. Senator Mike Braun from Indiana introduced an amendment opposing fracking bans. It passed 57-43, but it all reversed later with Schumer, his little move. Senator James Inhofe from Oklahoma, Republican, introduced an amendment supporting leaving the U.S. Embassy in Israel, in Jerusalem. It passed 97-3. Who voted against it? Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, a Jew, and Carper. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma, Republican, introduced an amendment supporting equal treatment of religious entities as compared to secular entities. That sounds very American, actually. And cutting federal funds from local governments that do not treat houses of worship equally to secular businesses. It passed 100-1, 100-none? No, of course not. 90-10? No. Come on, wake up. It passed 51-49. Joe Manchin voted with the Republicans. God bless you, Joe. A handful of amendments introduced by Democrats passed as well. Joe Manchin, the aforementioned, introduced an amendment supporting targeted stimulus payments and opposing stimulus payments for upper income taxpayers. That passed 99-1. Rand Paul opposed it. I'm all for means testing, by the way. You know what? I don't need a stimulus check. We're doing okay. We have enough. We're content. Give it to somebody that actually needs it, even though we're borrowing 40 cents on the dollar. Paul introduced an amendment supporting the penny plan aimed at balancing the federal budget. It failed 29-71. All Democrats opposed the amendment. It's like asking a 14-year-old or your college student if they want to live under a balanced budget. Of course, they're going to say no. Senator John Kennedy, a Republican from Louisiana, introduced an amendment to deny Small Business Administration stimulus funds to anyone convicted of riot-related crimes. It failed 49-51. Wow. Okay, see my point? This is the cow that we're worshiping. What do you expect? It's so broken up there. Hey, Steve, are you telling us not to pay any attention to Washington, D.C.? I'm not telling you not to pay any attention. I'm telling you to pay a lot less attention. Pray more. Engage closer. Like I've been saying, I'm going to keep saying this. By the way, I can hardly hear that. Shrink your America. Shrink it. Get involved closer to home. Make a difference where you can. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. The Steve Noble Show. Gosh, Steve, you're so obnoxious. I can't believe you're saying all these things. That's exactly why I'm on the radio, by the way. It's been that way for a while. And I have good friends that sometimes get upset with me. And I appreciate that. I really do. And I understand as much as I can. But it doesn't drive me. You accepting me or not wanting to hear what I have to say or hearing a contrary opinion or being presented with the fact that maybe we're just a bunch of political idolaters and the White House and Donald Trump were our golden calf. And so God has melted it down, bashed it into ashes, mixed it with water. And now we're drinking it. We're going to drink it. We drank it since November 3rd. We're going to drink it for the next 2 years, maybe the next 4 years, maybe the next 40 years in America. And America will never come back. It'll never be the same. And that will teach all of us to follow up with some 38 special theology to hold on loosely. The things of this world will grow strangely dim, the hymn says. The things of this world will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. Doesn't that sound wonderful? You know, you can have that now. Did you know that? Did you know that? The things of this world can grow strangely dim. And I think, God, that's kind of... As frustrated as I am today and as snarky and as angry as I am today, I also, in a second, I can turn the corner like right now and go, you know what? Whatever. There's nothing new under the sun. Solomon's right. New news is just old news happening to new people. Human nature has been the same since we got kicked out of the garden, and the same junk's been going on ever since. We want a leader. We get a king. We idolatrize. We turn into idolaters, whether it's a golden calf or Saul or whoever. And then they disappoint us and we get all racked and we're bent out of shape because, oh, I can't believe that happened. Really? Are you really that shocked? Do you ever read the Bible? Do you have a biblical worldview? You shouldn't be shocked by any of this stuff. So then all that stuff is sinking sand, and that's what you build your house on. That's your foundation, the shifting sand. And if that is, you're a double-minded man and unstable in all your ways, and you're going to get racked by the news of the day. You're going to lose sleep. You're going to hit your knees groaning and moaning and growing over the country. How much do we ever pray for lost people that we know like we do for the country? See the problem? So here's a couple more things. So just to kind of, let me go put some lipstick on that golden calf. This is funny. Kind of. Squad member, and then I'm going to get to the devotional I wrote today, and we're going to finish on a godly, gospel-centered, Bible-centered note. And get away from all this other garbage. Squad member Presley says she's shocked. That lowering voting age to 16 is a polarizing issue. This is so funny. Our young people deserve to have a stakeholder in our democracy, she said. Representative Ayanna Pressley, who used to have a big head of hair, now she shaved it all, a Democrat from Massachusetts on Thursday said she was shocked that lowering the voting age to 16 is a polarizing subject. Pressley, a co-sponsor of a resolution to HR1 that aims to lower the voting age to 16, made the comment on Thursday during a Facebook Live conversation with somebody. A Republican opponents of a policy that would lower the voting age to 16 argued that the move would guarantee more votes for Democrats because younger people lean left. Right? Beginning at the age of 16, young people are contributing to both the labor force and their local economies by paying income taxes, and yet they're deprived of the opportunity to exercise their vote, Presley said. So the right says, we have a problem with this because 16-year-olds are going to vote left. The left says, we need to get 16-year-olds to vote because they're paying income taxes. Here's what I think. You don't let a 16-year-old vote because they're stupid. God bless you. You're ignorant. You have no wisdom. You're not out on your own. You're not paying your own bills. You don't really know up from down. You probably just got over thinking that you're the opposite gender. And now we want you to be a part of the political process, as messed up as it is already. No, you're a child. You don't get to vote. Now, I believe in 18, because if we can draft you and send you off to war to die, you should be able to vote. Okay? That's the only reason. And I think other than that, no. You don't let 16-year-olds vote because they're dumb. Not lack intelligence, lack wisdom. They're ignorant. They're immature. And the prefrontal cortex for a boy doesn't even fully develop until they're 25. Now you want them voting by the millions? Hey, Ms. Presley, I think you're probably 16. Okay, let me move on. Stop being very Christ-like here. I love this one. This is just funny to me. Parkland shooting survivor and gun control advocate David Hogg, remember him? Plans to launch his own pillow company with the goal of competing against embattled bedding company MyPillow. The idea was posed to Hogg, 20, in a tweet from entrepreneur William Legate on Thursday that questioned whether the duo should start a pillow company to put MyPillow out of business. So, yeah, you got a couple of liberals on Twitter, and next thing you know, this is a big story. Make the MyPillow guy, this pillow fight just got very real, Hogg tweeted on Thursday. Though it might have initially seemed like a joke, Hogg later said that he was serious about the business venture. He tweeted a list of goals for the future company, blah, blah, blah. The website will be up in a couple of weeks. We're very much in the early stages right now, Hogg said. But we really are doing this. If you have a cool name idea, DM me, direct message for those of you that are older. We think we have one, but we're still open. So what are they? Well, it's a budding young socialist. So instead of my pillow, I suppose it should be everybody's pillow. Our pillow, maybe. And make it red. Or maybe, CCP yellow and red. I don't know. But the funny thing about this is this young guy, who I'm sure is all about socialist policies, definitely believes in capitalism because he wants to go fund a bunch of things because it takes money to do that, David. And I'm sure you wouldn't mind, like John Kerry, our new environmental czar, being able to fly around to all your little meetings in a private jet. I think that's funny, personally. And so me, at soon to be 55 years of age, as an adult, looks at what our children are doing, and you just kind of got to laugh, right? David Hogg shouldn't be allowed to vote either. All right, let me finish on a high note here. Working my way to the Gospel of John, have been for several months. We're in the John chapter 19, so only a couple chapters left. John 19:18, very short. And until I started studying up on this and looking around, I hadn't seen this before. So I entitled this Jesus Between. Okay. John 19:18, short. There they crucified him and with two others, one on either side, and Jesus between them. The scene was pregnant with meaning. The Son of God nailed to a cross with all of humanity represented by the two men beside him. One man mocked and hurled insults while the other spoke of the obvious. Unlike them, Jesus was an innocent man. One man died bitter and angry while the other died with hope and peace. Both men slipped away from the natural world, but only one of them opened his eyes in paradise. The other man sadly opened his eyes to torment and judgment, the brutal crucifixion being just the beginning of his agony, and Jesus between them. The English theologian Alfred Plummer observed that, quote, the whole of humanity was represented there, the sinless Savior, the saved penitent, the condemned impenitent, unquote. The same condition exists today. Jesus stands between the two destinies of every single human being and offers them a choice, and every single person makes one. For some, they choose to look away from the truth that God has made plain to them, that's Romans 1:19, and instead choose to believe that he simply doesn't exist. It's like they stick their fingers in their ears and go, la, 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 la. For many others, they're aware of the man in the middle, air quotes, but they simply choose not to get acquainted with him and pay little attention to what he has to say. But for a select few, and I hope that's you, Matthew 7:14, they see the man and choose to listen and believe in his message. Jesus was also centered between God and man, the only bridge available to cross the cosmic divide between the two. What neither man could do for himself, Jesus did on their behalf. Jesus took upon himself the guilt and shame of all their sin and paid their debts in full. One mocked him for his ridiculous claims while the other worshiped him for them. One man refused to budge while the other gave up his independence. Jesus is the only true mediator between God and man, 1 Timothy 2:5, and stands ready to take up your defense. At the cross, he was both the high priest and the offering, and he alone is what separates you from either God's wrath or God's mercy. Which thief are you? Which one represents your loved one, a friend, a neighbor, or a coworker? Their eternal death is imminent as they hang on the cross of decision. Will you urge them to look into Jesus' eyes and consider his message and offer of salvation? Or will you abandon them to a cruel fate and fade into the crowd like Jesus' disciples did, save one? That was John, by the way. Jesus is between both outcomes and stands ready to bring them or you with him into paradise. So that was just Gospel of John, chapter 19, verse 18. There they crucified him with him two others, one on either side, and Jesus between them. Okay, so there's that, and then there's Senate Republicans and Democrats and the Time Magazine article and the MyPillow Mike Lindell video exposing how the election was stolen and all that stuff, which is important, but it's not eternal, and it will fade, and its light will go out. On the other side, there's another light that won't go out. And that's the light of every man and woman's soul. It's not going to go out. It's going to be lit forever. But it will only burn in one of two places. Right? Heaven or hell. So I always come back to that. I've struggled with this myself for years, and I hope you struggle with it. Do we care more about America or Americans? Do we care more about praying that God would save America or that God would save Americans? I care about America because America is made up of 340 million people made in the image of God, and every one of them has inestimable worth, and every one of them is on that cross next to Jesus, and every one of them is going to end up either the guy on the right or the guy on the left, and that decision lasts forever. What these mostly bozos in Washington, D.C. do won't. So be careful if you're worshiping a golden calf. Right now, I think we're being forced to eat it, if we have. I'm not your judge. That's between you and the Lord. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.